Welcome to Standing Room Only on killradio.org. This is, of course, our poetry night. If you have any questions for any of our poets, you can call in 213-820-2342. Feel free to call in to the studio if you like. And we're going to be joined, all of you out there in radio listening land are going to be joined by several poets here in the studio this evening. First of which is right here to my right. Do you want to introduce yourself?
Eric Howard.
And you're going to be reading one of your own works right now? And what's the title?
The title is For Mark and His Advice.
Excellent. So let's go ahead and start with that, and we'll have more Standing Room Only after this. Go ahead. Thank you.
This is For Mark and His Advice. It's in Tetrameter. Addicted to both kinds of crack, you're cruising Santa Monica, looking for hustlers who like pipe. Mark, I promise you, a see-through hand is writing all your good deeds down, someplace hard to get to from here, though you don't turn your car around. The sun's long gone, the good people have already locked themselves in. Above the kid who's on parole, dark sky approaches, like a tire rolling over with a bad smell. Mark, you think that you can't be free, but you can't buy what you can't be. Some young one who has no soul, who's free because he's beautiful. It won't take long to die here, but the streets go on forever. The faces change just a little. This hard stage has no hero role. You've got the big recovery book looming above your angry mind, which doesn't feel good, not like the young ones on the street tonight do. They never give it away, like you did your shot at escape. In fact, you'd like to shoot that book that tells you what to do. You'd like to watch it fall for miles into the devil's yawning, scaly, hairy, wrinkled, puckered, red, caked, creviced, upside down, and flaming asshole.
Excellent. Thank you. Thank you very much. Do you want to talk about that piece a little bit, or do you want to talk about you a little bit first?
Sure.
Let's talk about the piece a little bit first.
The piece, well, I'm ashamed to admit this, but I didn't even bother to change the fellow's name. This is actually one of those poems that, you know, people always want to justify their poems by saying, this is based on something that actually happened, you know, as if that makes a difference. And this is one of those, I'm ashamed to admit. So I knew someone and thought I heard that joke made about him that he was addicted to both kinds of crack. So that's where it went from there.
And there's obviously a lot of NA stuff in there that I noticed.
Yeah.
I was able to pick out.
Yeah.
Oh, very cool.
I noticed that we're sharing a building with a 12-step group here, so.
Yeah, that runs in Spanish, actually. Mm-hmm. It's a Spanish language 12-step group. Yeah. And it's pretty interesting, actually. when did you let's just talk about you for a moment.
Okay.
When did you first take notice of poetry? When did you first gain an interest in poetry as an art and not just something else that was out there?
In the 10th grade, I had a teacher, a very wonderful, wonderful teacher by the name of Janet Martin, whose brother, by the way, owned El Cid for a number of years.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So, anyway, she started getting me on E.E. Cummings and T.S. Eliot, and then I started just devouring whatever I could get my hands on from there. And I can definitely trace it to someone in particular, and I'd like to thank that person, Janet Martin.
That's great, actually.
Or tell her, why the hell did you do this to me? I don't know.
One or the other. Is it a blessing or a curse? Is it a blessing or a curse?
Yeah. Well, beats me. I don't know.
It's the perfect poet's answer.
Yeah, it beats me. Really.
And then when did you start writing?
Well, ever since then, I've been, you know, writing off and on, a lot of off and some on, and publishing it and sharing it with people and finding ways to see if others want to share in it, that kind of thing.
What are some ways that people can, people who are getting, who are starting to get interested in writing their own poetry, what are some ways that they can get their works published? And what are some resources for them that you can think of?
Of course, right now, I think the internet is the way to go.
Yeah.
Simple as that. End of story.
What about readings, though?
I remember zines and all of those things, but, you know, they're all gone now, and the internet has taken their place, and so.
Well, some zines are still out there. You can still find a zine here and there. But, yeah, certainly the internet has made it a lot easier and a lot more accessible for all types of artwork.
Yes.
What about public readings, though? What about reading your work?
Well, I've just started that again recently.
Uh-huh. Are you involved in the Tribal Cafe thing that's going on with James Maverick?
Yes,
he's another Kill Radio superstar.
Yes, he is. He's a wonderful guy, and I've gone to his thing a couple of times now.
And can you tell?
It's very nice.
It is very nice, actually. I attended one myself. It's very good. Can you tell everybody when and where and how they can find that?
Oh, you got me. The Tribal is on, what is it? It's Beverly?
Temple.
It's on Temple, and it's near Alvarado. It's a block west. Block west of Alvarado on Temple. And this thing happens like on Wednesdays in the evening around 8 from there on.
Yeah, and it's good. It's a good show.
And, of course, they have a webpage. So if you can just go to Tribal Cafe and find that, then you can find, I imagine, their address there.
What would you recommend people do when they're preparing for their first reading poetry? Do you have any tips? The last weird question I'm going to ask you, I swear.
No, that's not a weird question. I like that one. That's good. Because it made me think. I didn't have something ready for that one. And the first thing that came to mind was when I first had to get up in front of people, I would take 2 shots of Jack Daniels. But I would not.
That's a good plan.
I would not recommend that you do that more than a couple of times, and do not become accustomed to it, and learn how to breathe deeply and things like that before you go on. If you have stage fright, if you're a shy poet, you know. To begin with, some people love to be on stage and they don't have a problem with it.
What's going through your head right before you go on and start to read your piece?
Oh, I hope they like me. I shouldn't say that, right?
No, that's perfect.
I should say something tougher.
Say something really profound. Yeah. I see seagulls flying through a quiet breeze. Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. I have a similar thought right before I go on the radio. It's not exactly I hope they like me. It's, I hope they don't throw stuff at me when I'm leaving the studio. It's pretty much my thought.
Yeah, you got to aim high, you know.
That's right.
That's what counts.
Do you want to read us one more of yours?
Sure.
Excellent. Thank you very much. More back with more Standing Room Only after this poetry reading.
All right, this one is called Secrets. And it has an epigraph. 3 can keep a secret if 2 are dead. Carlos Marcello. Every man, good deeds, and a lawyer were waiting to cross the river when the lawyer told every man he had a better friend. Good deeds will never lie with you in your grave or keep you company on the stainless steel table and not desert you when someone asks about you to an old friend or family or the others who betray you, if by no other act than living, as you betrayed them by dying. Good deeds will not stay with you in the silence, but separate themselves from you and represent you to God like a flack that cannot lie, but doesn't stay with you like secrets do, true secrets, the ones you've never told anyone and no one knows, at least from your lips. Secrets are your better friend. They'll go with you to your grave and stay there, close to your heart, even as it turns to dust. They will not speak of you to others. Like a dog, they're loyal even when their master is gone. Or like a leopard hunting you in a dappled forest, they know you well and are your welcome back to the wild, your one true home. They are what's most yours and the only thing the dead can keep.
Okay, excellent. And you are listening to Standing Room Only here on killradio.org. We have some more poets here that are joining us. Thank you for that second piece.
Thank you.
And people can call in. Where's our phone? Who took our phone number down, James?
Hey, oh. F and A. Yeah, our phone number.
Go to the website.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, you can check us out by going to our website. Well,
you're on
our website now. So, yeah, you can also check us out and give us a call and give us a hey, howdy, hey by giving us a call at 213-252-0998.
By the way, who the hell are you?
I'm James Maverick.
Yes, and you're here to read a few things as well?
Yes, I'm here to read. We also have a couple of very talented artists here. Mm-hmm. Brenda Petrakos and Marie Lecravaine. And they have great pedigrees. I think you're going to like them.
All right. Well, they can come on in here. Don't be afraid. That thing you heard about biting is not true. They couldn't prove that at all. So come on in.
I'd get up, but I don't want to knock the mic off.
Yeah, James told you not to move, so don't move. That's a special microphone. You can see it's being held together by magic tape.
Much like my personality.
Yes.
Is it like a short microphone, like a short bus type of microphone?
It is indeed a specialty microphone.
Okay.
So could the two of you introduce yourselves?
I'm Brenda Petrakos.
And you're going to have to get really close to this.
I'm Brenda Petrakos. I'm a storyteller, not a poet.
And she's a storyteller, not a poet.
Well, a prose.
And she does know it.
I'm a prosette.
That's the microphone that has no give to it. You're going to have to lean into it.
I'm Brenda's friend.
And I'm Brenda's enemy. And we came here together to bury the hatchet.
The Brendas.
And
that's a great name for a band. The Brendas. I like that.
We're writing a screenplay now.
You need a microphone, James.
I do need a microphone.
No one can hear your fantastic witticisms.
I wouldn't call them witticisms. Is this on?
Yeah.
I wouldn't call them witticisms, but thank you.
They're wittastic. So let's go ahead and let's hear some more poetry, shall we? Who would like to begin?
Let me see. Who was last?
Yeah, Eric.
Let's just go.
Yeah. All right. This is from my upcoming book.
Okay.
This is Brenda.
I don't want to sell a lot.
This is Brenda Petrakos.
Do we have a title for that yet?
Not yet. We're going to have to think of a title.
I still think that should be.
This is the one we're doing. I did this high school and went over real big. Home Depot at 3 a.m. Home Depot at 3 a.m. on a Tuesday night, hopping from one foot to the other, nervously twitching, his eyes shifting rapidly from shelf to shelf. He talks fast, his insides are on fire, hands shaking, sucking his teeth, alternately brushing nothing from his shoulders, skittishly moving, explaining to the girl next to him what kind of tool they really need. She chews on stubby black fingernails with chipped black nail polish and nods pensively. They both look like human chihuahuas, gaunt and shaking. It's 3 a.m. at the 24-hour Home Depot at Sunset and Wilton. No contractors here, no wives picking up plants and necessities. It's 3 a.m. in Hollywood at the 24-hour Home Depot, and this shopping experience is brought to you by the tweaker's demand for tiny projects. Projects that will never be finished. Tools purchased past midnight. It's that, we've got to get the needle nose pliers now, or the, we got to paint that thing blue now, from undisciplined, not-so-young tweakers. About to start another project after the final bump of the final line. their desperate activities, their unquenchable drive to retrieve that furniture from the alley, the trash bin, with big ideas on how to paint and repair and then make a lot of money selling it on, like, eBay, like at spot meets, and then he won't have to work day labor anymore, and she can quit the bar, and then, big-eyed, shaking generation, all tatted out, all pierced, all hipsters, setting fire to human potential with powdered pabulum, crystallized arrogance, calling mom or grandma or auntie for rent money. Oh, yeah, that's hip. Making babies for foster homes that make babies for foster homes that make babies for foster homes. The Hollywood hipsters. And the Mexican cashier laughs as she puts on her lip gloss and watches the Anglos chatter like chipmunks down the aisle at 3 a.m. on a Tuesday night.
Yeah.
All right. All right. Thank you very much. That's really good.
That's very nice.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
And we're gonna have another one. Another one. Now, be sure you take care of that high-class microphone, because there's no replacing a tape job like that.
We're edgy, baby. This is Hollywood.
Just a little bit so that we can...
You're on the edge.
We're going to adjust this so you can read.
Does this station have a tweaker to send to Home Depot?
Yeah.
Everyone in Hollywood has a tweaker to send to Home Depot.
There we go. There. Is that a little better?
Oh, yes. Okay. From this position, it's just fine.
I'm sorry.
That's all right.
Okay, there. That looks like it'll...
That often happens in front of me. Yeah. All right, this is a...
Maybe we should get Smiling Bob to fix this for you.
Why don't I just hold it?
Okay, I got it.
Maybe. Okay. Actually, this is a piece that I dedicated to Brenda, and she does it much better than I do. It's called Running Amok, and it's a Star Trek reference. That afternoon, I was chatting with a coworker in the cafe at Borders Books in Santa Monica. My back was turned away from the register when a voice boomed behind me. I'll have a cappuccino for my wife and a double espresso. That voice! It was the voice I'd heard a million times. A baritone stream charged through my ear canal, froze the neurons in my brain and throat muscles in my neck with instant recognition. My mouth was sealed shut. I prayed he wouldn't see the thought ballooning from the top of my head. It's Leonard Spock. No, I mean, it's Captain Nimoy. No, oh my God. I counted to three in Klingon, but I couldn't turn to face him. My coworker went on her lunch break. She wasn't a sci-fi fan. She had no idea who this man was. I spun my head. There he was, very tall, or so it seemed, and wearing square glasses, standing next to a stately-looking blonde. My lips compressed, my heart slowed, and lack of air caused me to force out the words, "That will be $5.75." I skulked over to the espresso machine, surreptitiously gulping down my urge to beg for his autograph or stare at his disappointingly round ears and churn milk under the steam wand with extra vigor. Mrs. Spock must have stiff foam for her cappuccino. The shots I pulled were lacking in their signature creme color, so I pulled eight more while he chatted with his wife, oblivious to my restraint. "That'll be $5.75, I repeated, bringing the drinks to the register. He handed me a $20 bill, its surface sweaty from being held too long. My thumb lightly brushed over Andrew Jackson's moist pompadour. I shook my head, gritted my teeth, punched in the transaction, and handed him his change. "Thanks," he replied, saluting me with his espresso while dropping a buck into my tip jar. "You're welcome," I said, watching him and his wife stroll out from the counter and out of sight. The knot in my chest loosened, my brain pumped full force, and my mouth opened wide. "Live long and prosper," I yelled into empty space.
All right.
I love that.
Fantastic. Great. Awesome. Let's chat for a little bit before we read some more. Before we meet, read some more stuff. Careful where you point that thing, James.
Yeah. Right there. I think I've got it right here, so that we can.
So you can pivot the microphone back and forth. You're gonna be our MC, our microphone controller, literally this time.
Boom boy. Yeah. Hi.
You wanted me to say something.
No, I was just trying to get the what you were saying actually out there on the airwaves for the rest of Radio Land. So, well, let's start with Brenda, and then we'll get to the friend of Brenda.
Her name happens to be Marie.
Yes, I know her name is Marie. I see it right
famous.
Here on the flyer.
She's kind
right
of famous
in, front of my
in a
face.
Way. She's been around.
Yes, and she's published, too. I
she's
see she was reading from
many
a
times
from
her
a published book.
Oh, my goodness. She's published
fantastic.
In magazines. She's an editor.
Oh, yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry. Yeah, I know. It's because I'm a loudmouth and I have no sense of discretion. Marie is also a publisher of...
Poetic Diversity.
Poetic Diversity. Thank you. Yeah, I almost messed up and said Red Hand, and I know it's not Red Hand. So, yeah, which would have been a major faux pas for me.
But we've had many faux pas this week. I don't need any more.
No okay. more faux
no
pas. Poetic Diversity.
No.
I'm also the poetics editor for Get Underground.
Oh, you know what? Let's do that. Yeah. Let's swing that boom around. And, okay. Yeah, say that again.
Again.
Yes. Oh, okay, good.
Thank you. We have a definite lack of microphones here in the studio. We need to get more. I was hoping James would cough up a few extra microphones this month for us.
No, I have absolutely no microphones. Yeah, why are we holding... Yeah, that stand is just so totally... No, it's not working.
Yeah, the stand is actually lame. I think that you can probably... do this kind of a thing.
Yeah, you know, actually.
We'll be like Sammy Davis. It'll be cool.
Let them
be. We should have done
like
that
rat
from the
pack.
Beginning.
We'll just push
them
around.
Yeah, definitely.
I'll hold a martini and be Dean Martin. It'll be cool.
Yeah, we'll pass them around.
Yeah, man.
Good plan. This microphone has a cord length of about half a foot, so I don't think it's going very far.
I know. My mom gave me more cord.
Ooh, there's a microphone.
We have a big inflatable microphone, but I don't think that's going to work out. Marie, tell us some things about you. When did you first get involved in, we'll just say poetry. When did you first get involved? What was your earliest, like, first experience?
I don't know, writing poetry as a 15-year-old, nerdy, very ugly girl who couldn't get a date, who couldn't, like, make sense of anything. It was worse than the ugly duckling. And I wrote very bad rhyming poetry. I found one journal. It's a weird backstory, but I had in one little suitcase by the time I was 19, I had everything I had ever written, along with some love letters from a boyfriend I had who was very inappropriate at the time. And I'd gone away.
Why were they inappropriate?
They were inappropriate because the guy was married.
And
I was still living at home, and my mother had gone into my room with the intention to paint it. And she found these letters in this, you know, trunk, and being how mothers like to snoop, and then threw away everything except for one journal that I had. Wow. Was that about no batteries and inflation? Never mind.
The inflatables lack batteries.
Inflatable black batteries. Hey, that's another name. And the Brendas.
Yeah, that's the name of my new band, Inflatable Black Batteries.
We've got two bands already.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is the microphone band name hour. No, and I have one journal, and I still go back and look at it, and I'm like, ugh. Because it was full of, like, really stupid, lame, nerdy, gothic vampire poetry.
And when do you consider... that you you really kind of, I guess you could say, professionally got involved in poetry? You know, when did it become something that was...
I don't think that you could say my involvement is professional, because
okay.
To say it's professional would be to say that I could actually sustain a living from it, and I've never been able to do
that.
Oh,
there are many professionals who sustain no living from their...
Well, then it's an avocation. That's
okay.
really what
yes.
you should call it, is an avocation.
Okay.
I got back in the poetry scene, or I got
a
into the
habit.
LA poetry scene five years ago. Actually, 5 years ago last month, and I started publishing Poetic Diversity in the fall of 2003 because I was getting published a lot online, and I wanted to start a journal, and the cost of print versus online, it was a no-brainer.
Right.
And I always like to say that I have a circulation of 6 billion plus, because it's the World Wide Web.
Where can people find your so-called World Wide Web? Now, where can people find where can people find your journal?
They can find it at www.poeticdiversity.org.
All right. Is it free to subscribe?
It's free to subscribe, to look, to do whatever. The copyrights from everything it's written belong to everybody who wrote it and published it. So if you take it and try and pass it off as your own, the poetry police will come after you.
Uh-huh. I heard you have a posse, actually.
No,
send them
no
out
posse.
After people. Your no poetry posse.
No, he means a group of people.
Oh, no, those are not those.
what did you think I meant?
Oh no! You mean my?
You meant cowboys on a, you know, on a ranch?
Yeah, that's what I meant. Like a bunch of people on horseback with guns who are going to gun you down if you steal their poetry.
So it's really it's not a posse.
He meant an entourage.
It's the poets from the pond.
Being fresh.
Yeah, it's the poets from the Ponderosa.
Well,
being fresh. Where's this going?
Okay.
Wow, you've made me blush, James. I'm impressed. No one's ever done that, except 20 million other people. So, you ask a question. You're good at asking questions.
Okay, great. Eric, can you please describe to us your poetic epiphany?
Oh, thank you so much asking that that deep question. I've been caught by surprise twice now. My poetic epiphany. Okay, first thing comes to mind, Epiphany Proudfoot from Angel Heart. But I suppose that wouldn't have anything to do with a poetic epiphany.
Was this the movie with Robert De Niro and Lisa Bonet, or
yes.
Am I thinking a different
yes,
Angel Heart?
Mickey Rourke
and Lisa Bonet.
Lisa Bonet is
yeah.
Epiphany.
James knows every Lisa Bonet movie on the face of the earth. So
why wouldn't he?
Of course, yeah.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, we should go by her current sobriquet, which is Lilikoi Moon.
Seriously?
We can't. You're going to have to speak into the microphone.
I was asking, you know, when did you first become a professional Lisa Bonet aficionado?
And her first question was, can you make a living at this?
I became an aficionado when the restraining order was lifted. She
totally lacked understanding on that whole issue, I think.
Who, Lisa?
Yeah.
Are you talking about Venice Heart? Her, because she had a.
I'm just trying to work with you here. I'm sorry.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh.
He's working with you, James. Not against
you. He's being
you.
Pithy. Okay. He's
yes,
being
Eric
pithy.
Was being a Bonet naysayer.
Yeah. A boat. I can't do it. Okay.
Yeah, a Bonet naysayer. Yes.
A Bonet naysayer. A Bonet
naysayer.
A Bonet naysayer.
Are we dropping celebrity names on a poetry show?
Yes, because this is celebrity poetry here on Kill Radio.
Celebrity poetry names, like
yes.
Jewel.
Well, yes.
Withdrawn.
I'm
objection,
that
Your
girl
Honor.
With a guitar, beware.
I brought some Yeats. If you
brought some Yeats?
You want to talk about, you know, Babe Ruth or the equivalent, you know, the poetic equivalent, Babe Ruth or Lisa Bonet.
We could get into that. Marie.
Yes.
Thank you for playing. So you started publishing this journal.
Yeah.
And how long ago was that? 2-3 years ago?
It's just been...
Almost 5.
No, it's been about just going into my fourth year.
Going into your fourth year.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent. And can anybody submit material to this journal, or is there, what is the process? So if people want to get involved who are listening, what should they do?
They go to the website and they read the submission rules, which you'll find on the toolbar, on the right-hand toolbar going down, and on the right across the page it says submission rules, and you write a introductory letter. Do not start it with, hey, Marie, how are you? Or what was it?
May I interject here for a second?
I've gotten weird submission letters all the time. I mean, just
a word of advice here. Never start off in a query letter with the words "we be."
Okay.
We be.
Okay. We be writing, you know, things like that.
Right. Yeah. We be poeticizing.
Say, you know, dear editor, dear Marie, dear Miss Lecrivain, dear occupant, I don't care. As long as it starts with dear and not my dear, because that won't score any points.
Yeah.
you know, here's three poems.
Unless you're hot, then.
Three poems and a bio. and then you wait, because I don't like to be bothered within 30 days. I get people who send me poetry, and then like an hour later, they're all, did you like it? Can you use it? Oh, and a word to the wise to people. The last 10 people who've sent me submissions, and this is, seems to be an epidemic happening. If you're going to simultaneously submit to other publications, it's not a good idea to have the thing where it says undisclosed recipients or put everybody's name in the to field.
Right.
Because you poetry need a up for grabs. Yeah, BCC poetry up for there. Grabs is not professional.
Yeah. Those are all some good tips, actually, for people.
Yeah, I would suggest that if you are interested in reading in any publication, whether it's hard copy or online, definitely read the website or read the book or the anthology. And if your poetry kind of goes along that line or in that theme, then you know you have a pretty good idea of whether your work is going to be a good fit or not. So it's better to do that and send your poem to a few publications which are more likely to publish it rather than doing it all scattershot, as Marie had described.
And we need to hear from Brenda, and then we'll read some more poetry. Brenda?
Yes?
when did you first really feel like a poet?
I've never really actually felt like a poet.
Oh, what a great answer. That's awesome. Poetry.
I'm a prosette. I write prose.
She writes prose. She's
not good enough to be a poet.
Storyteller.
If you're not good enough to be a poet, you're in trouble. I like money too much.
She is a prosette, which is a poet who had good parents. So, I have a question for Brenda.
Yes.
And it's a story that I think you've told a couple of times. And I'm not sure if it's something you want to, I don't know. Well, this is the internet radio and anything goes.
I got to hear this now.
Now, what is it?
Okay.
My attention has been piqued.
Okay.
Is it that one about you and the duck-billed platypus?
No, that one's on streaming live video, I think.
No, about the guy.
What guy?
That guy.
That mean asshole guy? You
want
to talk about that?
Guy.
Why would you?
Did you want to?
I don't care.
You don't care?
So ask me the question.
Okay.
What is the question?
Okay. Describe rejection.
Wow. Describe rejection. What does this have to do? I don't understand what you're trying to actually give me.
The asshole guy.
The asshole guy,
because
okay.
Because I think that's a great segue into the asshole guy story.
Okay,
sucker
describe
punch
rejection.
From James Maverick.
Describe rejection. Series of blows to the head and chest by people who are less than you are. I guess that's rejection. Yeah. A lot of times rejection is God's protection, because sometimes you get rejected by people that you're really not supposed to be around to start with.
Ooh, that's a good one.
So rejection for me is lessons. It's like a series of lessons. A lot of times you go somewhere you shouldn't be there anyway, and then you get rejected and you're like, first you're hurt and surprised, and then you realize, oh, this is not right. This is not a good fit anyway. So that's rejection. Okay. Why are you interested in that story?
That's even better than the asshole guy story. So
good.
We'll just leave it at that. That's good.
Great.
Okay.
Thank you.
Cool.
Really, because I want to hear about the asshole guy.
No, you're not going to hear about the asshole guy.
Just as a little tip, if you ever are involved with a woman,
asshole,
don't tell them, you're really great in every way. I really would love to be with somebody like you. It's too bad you look like that.
What?
Not nice. Not nice. Yeah, not nice.
This guy's blind.
No, he's an asshole.
Insane. Blinded by his own enormous gaping asshole, I guess.
Exactly. And he just wanted to go, well, first of all, motherfucker, you are not that hot yourself. I just have to say. I'm going to pull up a little mirror and see what's going on.
That's
scary, huh?
That's crazy.
But that's just life. I mean, there are people who are like no editing.
Yeah.
God got me out of there.
We're going to send them to no edit islands where they can live out their days with the rest of the no editors.
What happens is when you talk like that, you end up alone. That's what happens. You get no Brenda. You don't even get a taste of Brenda. You get nothing.
Anyway. Really? So that didn't turn you on? That wasn't like a compliment?
That was not a turn on. Sad but true.
No, it was not.
Not a good bar pickup line.
So,
but in a bar?
No, I'm just kidding. Wow, you're really great. But whew, what did that look?
Yeah, that's that was from, you know, 100 ways to fuck up Afterglow. So, yeah. I know we, you know, being poets, being artists, I think we're all a little too familiar with rejection. But let's start with Eric and then go down the line to Marie and then Brenda. When your work has been accepted on some level, and the first time you actually recognized that, how did you feel?
Oh, my goodness. I was getting all ready for the rejection question. You know,
yeah,
I was going to say, yeah, when you thought of rejection, your eyes turned over to me, you know.
Oh,
it's nothing personal, I'm sure.
My chair was cheated this way already. You couldn't ask any of these other people over here
how they experience rejection. No, you came straight to me. And I appreciate that. You know, it's that kind of honesty that really helps in a relationship. And anyway.
This is clever
rejection.
Radio repartee.
The first time, I will tell you the truth. I have a very fond memory of a very long time ago. And it wasn't in a galaxy far away, but it was over at Cal State LA, which is kind of, you know, similar in an intellectual and moral sense. And anyway, there I was. I'd gotten some prize and I'd won some money, and a whole bunch of people who, you know, were English majors and knew or pretended or wanted to know the difference between something bad and good applauded me, and I felt quite gratified by that. And yeah, that's it, man. That's, you know, 20, 30 years now. Oh, well, you know, getting published is nice. That's always nice, getting published. And yeah, I was a teacher, got to share it a little when I was teaching. I don't know if I influenced anybody. I was just thinking about this the other day. They're probably still thinking over at Fairfax High School, you know, boy, that was the weirdest English teacher, you know, that they ever hired, you know. Maybe they'll remember me for that.
Yeah, well, you know what? I think I only remember the quirky English teachers, because the straight-laced English teachers, I've just never have, you know, have stayed in my mind at all.
The worst thing you can be is a boring teacher, actually. So you probably made more of a profound influence than you realize.
Well, I hope so.
Are we continuing down the line? I think so.
Yeah. Oh, yes. We will go on to Marie. Marie.
Also known as the friend of Brenda.
Go ahead. Yeah, friend of Brenda.
What was the question?
Go ahead.
You know what? We were talking about rejection, and then, you know, I switched gears on you a little bit and talked about how it felt the first time. Yeah, the first time you felt validated by your art. But
you know, I was a photographer for a number of years, and it was interesting because you could see the your own evolution in a visual way. It's much harder to see that when you're working with words. I mean, you get validation every time, I think, that you get up and you can get through a reading. Or actually, for me, this book that I have that I've been reading out of, my newest book, Nihilistic Foibles, every time I've sold a copy of this, it's going to sound really petty, but watching my Amazon ranking rise over a 24-hour period.
Yay.
I mean, I sold 20 copies of this book on Amazon. My catchphrase was, help me beat out Ann Coulter for the number 100 spot. And I got up as high as like 13,000.
All right.
Which was fun. And that was cool. And also because, not to sound like, I'm not trying to put up, you know, like the bra-burning feminist flag, but this book that I have especially, it seems that the majority of the people that like it are men.
Hmm.
A lot of my male writer friends have been the ones that have commented the most about it. So that's kind of cool. Right now I'm reading a book on the Brontes, the Bronte sisters.
Oh, Charlotte and
yeah,
Emily.
And they all wrote under like male pseudonyms. So it's kind of like hitting home again about how much still, even in the 21st century, that writing is still considered to be a male profession.
Mm-hmm.
So when you, in a sense, to get that validation from you know, the establishment, I guess, is pretty good. Or you just know, too, when you write and you've done a piece, like, especially if you've done it, like, in one sitting, mm-hmm. and you look at it and you're like, wow. You know, that happens to me, like, maybe once every 6 months. But then you get that good feeling, you know, that not so much validation from other people, but self-validation, which mm-hmm. is the most important thing.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that's a really good high. I met Ann Coulter one day. I went up to her and said, "Hey, Ann, why the long face?" But insofar as, yeah, that self-validation, I mean, you know, I think that being an artist as we are, rejection is just so much like de rigueur, or you know, just such a daily way of life that you get that kind of like down feeling, and you kind of get addicted to a dystopic type of feeling, you know. But I think there are some highs in being validated as an artist. Brenda, how about you?
How about me what?
Let me see. We already talked about rejection.
Rejection
was
my personal rejection,
yes.
Which was great, Boomer. I cannot tell you how I was like, I was just thinking, can my family listen to this now so they know that I'm not only a whore, but a rejected whore? It's not a good.
No, you were not a. No.
No, you're not a rejected
no,
whore.
No, you
anyway.
Were not. You're not, you know, that.
My nephew cannot listen to this program.
Are you?
Anyway.
Is your family really listening?
No, they probably, I don't know. They wanted to, them, you know, it's okay.
Yeah,
they're not going
okay.
to now.
Oh, no. No.
My family
no.
are easily recruited. The first time I got any kind of accolade for my writing was when I won a bunch of awards for the first play I wrote when I was a kid. And that was very cool. And I promptly stopped writing and started drinking professionally. So after years of drinking professionally.
Could you make money at that? Was that a good...
Drinking professionally?
Yeah.
Oh, yes. I learned how to do stand-up comedy so you could drink full-time.
Nice.
You only have to work 1 hour a day. That's fantastic. And... and then when I started doing this, it was really amazing to me that people got the weirdness that I was doing. So that was very cool. So that always makes me happy. So,
fantastic.
Great.
Let's hear some more poetry. That's why we're here. And let's start. Let's go this way this time. Let's start with Eric. Do you have another one of your own pieces you'd like to read?
Sure.
Okay. Excellent. And you are listening to Standing Room Only on the one and only Kill Radio. org. It's our poetry night. Thanks for joining us. James Maverick just brought up his MySpace page. Apparently the Jackson 5 are a very prominent part of his life.
Oh, well, you know what? I'm so glad you asked. I have the Jackson 5 on my MySpace page as a background. Because it kind of halfway ties in, well, kind of like, actually more like, sort of, well, it does tie into the show that I have here on Kill Radio on Sunday mornings. I have a show on Sunday mornings called 622 Soul Street. I play gospel, hip-hop, and R&B music.
And then there's your three-hour Jackson 5 only show, which is on Tuesday nights, in which you only play original Jackson 5 music for 3 hours a day. It's a very good show.
It's a very good show, and there was this one... there was this one special show I did where Tito was on peyote, and
that's great.
It was just one three-hour drum solo. Love it was Tito. Just really remarkable piece of art.
I missed.
They
Tito.
Called it Teyote.
What's that?
Which one converted to Islam? It was in the news. One of the Jackson 5 is now he's trying to get Michael Jackson to convert to Islam.
Oh yeah, that I believe is Jermaine, who lives in Bahrain right
Michael
now.
Would look
so.
Bad in a burqa though, so no. It wouldn't really.
Oh.
Well,
that's just not right. Jermaine in Bahrain.
Yeah. Jermaine in Bahrain.
Yeah.
There's a limerick in there.
But it is very germane to this conversation, so I'm glad we were able to work it in there. Are you ready for a Sarek?
Oh yes.
Excellent.
This one is called Prospero's Arrival. When God looked through a microscope, as at a fingernail, at the continent, almost invisible at its brave edge, in motorcycle boots, a tiny man, a gun and cross and flag and staff and book in his hands, like a cartoon Shiva appeared, and then this living green and formless land began to set like gel. Touched, it trembled into a shimmering liquid that changes as if by sudden magic to crystal, a continent shattered into acres, a forest meant paper and bison cows. Caliban, hidden deep in the bushes, stared. Before the howling wilderness, the man almost despaired, but caught himself, let faith return. He had a world to set straight.
Wow.
Excellent. Thank you very much. I can't clap with a microphone in my hand. It sounds like this. But I'm clapping.
Thank you.
But that is the sound of one hand clapping. Oh, James, you got rid of all my stuff.
No, I did not, damn it.
Yes, you did. Okay, let's continue down the line.
I was going to say, you are a poet, but in a good way. That's quality work.
Wow.
Yes, wow, thank you. Talk about validation.
That is a great compliment.
You have no idea how much I'm going to go off on an editor diatribe for about 5 seconds. What passes for people think should pass for poetry these days. So it's refreshing to hear what really should pass for poetry these days.
Well, that's going to be the soundbite too. You're a poet, but in a good way.
I was going to read something until you said that.
Oh, stop. No. If I didn't like your work, I would have pulled you off the stage 2 minutes after you went over the 3-minute time limit on Sunday.
I went over the time limit on Sunday.
You were at 5:48 on that, and the second poem alone.
Oh, okay.
Actually, but you had everybody riveted. So I was like,
yeah,
okay.
The second one you had everybody's attention.
Weren't like that Bible lady, the anti-Bible lady at the end. Thank you.
Oh my God.
She was 8.5 minutes.
She was 8.5 minutes. Sunday at Beyond Baroque. which Marie was the hostess.
I was hosting, but I was hosting with something that was trying to give birth in my stomach. Never eat chorizo con huevo and have 2 Diet Cokes over at a restaurant whose name I'm not going to mention because I don't want to get sued.
No, you can get sued. No, wait. You actually got sick at that restaurant.
No, I got sick after I left the restaurant.
But
as my roommate said, gringas should not eat.
But the food was still a causal factor.
What can I say? Gringas should not eat Mexican food.
Anyway.
But well, no, you. What was the place? Please don't say La Cabana.
We're running towards the end of the show, though, so
all right.
We need to get a few more poems.
Speaking of sick and weird things, I'm going to read one of my Paris poems. This is about the catacombs in Paris. Has anyone ever been? Don't.
No.
Anyway.
Okay.
Right
now?
Yes, go right now. No. If anyone isn't familiar, the catacombs in Paris are it's a 2-kilometer stretch underground that are filled with the bones of, I think it's over 1 million Parisians. And the French are wonderful because they disinterred all these graves so they could have more room for plumbing. All these bones in a quarry for over 100 years, and then they turned them into art.
Excellent.
Oh, hi, Raphael. How are you?
My zipper won't stay up, damn it.
Ladies and gentlemen, Raphael's penis.
Then you'll need this.
Oh, it is inflatable, so the rumors were true. No. Okay, anyway, this is called...
This is some good radio we have going on right here.
Yeah.
This is called Yarmus des Os, which means tears of bones in my terrible French. Nothing prepares me as I descend into the dark. My steps reluctantly become reverent. In a tunnel this narrow, only the conscious inflation of my lungs reassures me I'm still 3-dimensional. In this labyrinth, the bones of the dead are piled in convex rows, topped with skulls that smile under sodium lights. I force back bile and scold myself for thinking it would be a lark. My tourist book says Parisians often run drunk through the constricted halls, stealing bones as trophies for their daring whimsy. The chill immobilizes every sound. I listen for the voices of the couple who preceded me. Their nervous laughter bounces off the walls, fades, and I am alone among the dead. I hear the nursery rhymes I sung as a child, but they are drowned out by the monotonous water drops seeping off of bones and walls, gathering into puddles on the ground. These bones weep at being ripped from their cradles and reinterred here, while their memories and dreams become tangled. These bones seep away at the last shades of love, leached to a dirty gray. One drop of death splashes on my left shoulder. Hollowed eyes shed great glacial streams. I weep with the rest.
All right. Excellent.
Do you have time for one more?
Yes, we do. We have time. Definitely.
Buddha babies. The 19th incarnation of Buddha sat glassy-eyed, lights flashing, eerie sounds all around him. The 19th incarnation of the Buddha was brought to this place by his mother, an incarnation of no one at all, a spirit without merit or consciousness, so much so that when she was prone to speak harshly to the 19th incarnation in a tone and in a pitch that in the old world would signal the advancement of the Huns. This confused female also had an alternate spirit and voice, one so comforting and soft tones, sweet temperament, which could inspire the 19th incarnation to relax and create the necessary illusion of peace. Sadly, it was an illusion. As the 19th incarnation was to learn, this mother/girl/woman would turn without a moment's notice and resort to her bellowing howl at the slightest infraction of her absurd rules, usually regarding some possessions placement or hygiene standard, both of which had no value in the universe. But at this time, the 19th incarnation of the Buddha was only 4 years old. And so he had not yet the skills to communicate his wisdom. And even if he did, the mother was so young of mind, she would be incapable of listening. The fourth incarnation of St. Francis of Assisi was in toddler blue jeans, happily giving away his birthday cup of tokens as his mother chased him down, trying to restrain his benevolence. The reincarnation of William Randolph Hearst and John D. Rockefeller hoarded and stole tokens and tickets surrounded by the surrounding children by following the younger children from one end of Chuck E. Cheese to another, swift and unrepentant as they plundered. The 19th incarnation of the Buddha just stood, glassy-eyed, as the flashing lights and eerie sounds of the Chuck E. Cheese Tower of Power game surrounded by the next generation of the world, shoved by Little Caesars and running Hitlers, whining Sartres, crying Gandhis. In a moment, the idea crossed his mind that all the noise and prizes were meaningless, that the image of his mother complaining about how much money, also meaningless, she spent on the drive home, and the recounting his misdeed, whatever it was, also meaningless, during his evening would be an inevitable, disheartening reality. However, he knew that a visit to Chuck E. Cheese was really merely one more example of what was to come. As the fourth incarnation of St. Francis was tripped by the second incarnation of Stalin, gold tokens went spilling on the floor. The fourth incarnation of St. Francis's mother was horrified and unable to restrain a frenzy of children, wide-eyed with token lust, diving to the ground all around her, children grasping and pushing to take the coins that were not theirs, dropped by a saint who was willing to give them away after being tripped by a reincarnated dictator. These creatures will one day manage the planet. After being set against each other, taught to lust from the earliest youth, set on a path of consumption of products that have no value in the universe at all. And all the little Buddhas are parented by teenage mothers. And all the little Stalins with Spanish nannies. And all the Hitlers with financial rewards dangled before them daily, worshiping flashing lights and instant gratification. God have mercy on us all.
I'm afraid we're out of time, actually. So let me just thank everyone for being here. And do you want to introduce yourselves one more time? We'll go around.
It's Brenda Petrakos.
Marie Lecrivaine.
Eric Howard.
And I'm James Maverick.
And thank you so much for listening to this fantastic poetry night that we had here this evening on Standing Room Only. We should do it again. Maybe we'll do it again in a couple of months. We will have a brand new show next week. Standing Room Only. We will have Don Bowles from The Germs in the studio playing some of his newest music. So be sure to tune in for that. Thank you, all of my guests, for coming in tonight. Poetry was fantastic. And next is going to be Ross Lincoln doing the all-new Ross Lincoln show. It's going to be great.
Yeah, it will be fantastic.
He's going to Ross it up.
He's going to Ross it up.
Hey, what's up?
All right, so you're listening to Standing Room Only on Kill Radio. We'll see you next week, everybody. Bye-bye.